I'm Greg Bidet, you're listening to a special ad-free episode of PDXPodcast.com. Today we chat with singer-songwriter and producer Midger. We'll be performing along with Paul Young at the Aladdin Theatre August 26th. Mark Kay is providing the music today. It's a cover version of Vienna by Ultravox. We're also going to be hearing from Benjamin John Power of Blank Mass, who collaborated with The Editors on their Violence album released this year. Let's get right to it and hear all about the weather from Midger in Edinburgh. Hello, hello.
Hi, is that Greg?
Ah, yes, it is.
Hey,
Midger, how are you?
I'm incredibly well, thank you, Greg.
You sound fantastic. You must be calling me from a real phone.
It's a real phone, yeah. None of these cell phone things. This is a proper phone. It's not Skype. You get a proper signal, and I'm standing here basking in the sunshine, making the most of global warming. There we go.
Right, now England's just baking.
It's absolute. We've had something like 10 weeks of this, which is unheard of. It's just crazy.
I know, it's nuts. Now you're playing Portland pretty soon, August 26th at the Aladdin Theatre. Have you been there before?
I've been to Portland before. I haven't done the Aladdin Theatre though, so I'm kind of looking forward to that. It's gonna be fun. Portland's a very cool place.
Everybody's coming here. Yes. It's getting to be a problem.
I'm going to have to stay in and grow a beard or something to make myself cool enough to be there.
You know, that would look great. That would look fantastic. Now, I was just watching your TEDx Youth presentation, TEDx Bath.
Oh, right. Okay.
When was this?
It was probably about 5 or 6 years ago. I'm dreadful with time timelines. So I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago. And so dreadful that I think on a TED talk, you meant to talk for 18 minutes. And of course I ran over and they had to kind of drag me off. So I think I broke the rules somewhat. But it was good fun doing it, though.
And I thought it was funny you asked the kids if they remembered who the Beatles were.
Well, I mean, it's funny because there's an entire generation grown up now who don't know what Live Aid was. So,
That's true.
And that was a lot more recent than the Beatles. So, so I think it's quite a justified question.
Right. No. In the following, Midger recounts how he came to work with composer Ty Unwin on the orchestrated album, featuring reinterpretations of some of his classic tunes.
I met him at Howard Jones's house. Howard was having a kind of Christmas bash, and I'd been looking for someone to do this orchestrated idea with. And Ty came over to me in the room and said, "You don't know me, my friend Howard. You know, I'm really into synthesizers. I love my technology." But he said I'd do a bit of film music, but didn't really go into it in any great detail. And it wasn't for another 3 or 4 months or something later, when I was still struggling trying to find the right person, the right sidekick to do this with, I emailed him and I asked him very rudely, if he was the kind of musician that if he put something down on paper, would a proper musician be able to read it? Because I don't read or write notation. So he said, "Yes. Do you mean can I score music? Yes, I can." And then he started telling me that he was a massive fan, and the first ever orchestration that he did was an Ultravox tune. So I thought this is in good hands because he cares about this as much as I do. And I let him loose on any track that he wanted to do. And when I heard the finished results, I was just blown away. It was just phenomenal.
Yes, you're grinning like a little kid on that promotional video when you start to hear the orchestra.
Yeah. I think there's something about, I don't know whether it's an ego thing or not, but there's something about hearing there's this room full of strangers all kind of fire up together. Look at some pieces of paper with some markings on it and make this absolutely beautiful sound that you have created. You know, you're responsible for that melody that they're playing, or the counter melody, or whatever. And to sit there and hear this thing come to life is just spectacular. I mean, not many people really get the opportunity to sit down and have that kind of buzz, that kind of feeling.
Yes, and boy, my favorite songs on this album are the saddest, Lament, Death in the Afternoon. But these songs, they're hugely sad now. I don't know if that's the most eloquent way to put it, but they're even sadder.
That's good. That's all right. There's nothing wrong with a sad song. You know, they can't all be happy and about, you know, love and relationships. My big worry about doing this was that I might ruin other people's feelings of the original versions, because we're all fans of someone else's music, and I would hate to hear something that I have loved for 40 years. I'd hate to hear an artist redo it and completely sully the original version. So I was very, very aware that that not only do I not want to ruin these songs for myself, I certainly didn't want to ruin them for, you know, for the people who bought them and loved them, you know, all that time. So to try and do something new and different and take them to a different place was a priority, absolute number one priority.
Now, you're very successful. I enjoyed Vienna in a totally different way. I didn't think that was even possible.
Well, it's funny. Vienna seems to have taken on a bit of a revival right now. You know, it's just been in some the assassination of Gianni Versace, big TV series that was shown all around the world. They used Vienna in that a pivotal moment. I think 13 Reasons Why, the Netflix kind of teen film about suicide, they used Vienna in that. So it just seems that maybe now is the right time for that piece of music to surface.
I loved your comments too about Ordinary Man. That came out of nowhere. I didn't see that one coming.
Yeah, and neither did I, to tell you the truth. It wasn't until halfway through the album that Ty said, well, you know, we have the idea now. We know how this works. You know, we've got 5 or 6 tracks under our belt. Wouldn't it be really interesting trying something absolutely from scratch? So we started throwing some ideas around, and over the space of a couple of months, I ended up finishing the lyrics and writing the vocal melody, and I'm ecstatic with how it's turned out. I'm really pleased, you know, for a new track, and especially for something where you're not thinking of, you know, does this have to be a single? Does this have to be a certain length? Does this, you know, what does this have to fit in with a new album? Is it a new concept? No, it's not. It's just a song, and we gave it the treatment that the song deserved. And for me, the interesting part was being able to insert it amongst other songs that were maybe 3 years old or maybe 35 years old.
Oh, it holds
and
up.
And you cannot... It holds up. You cannot tell the difference.
Yeah,
you cannot
right.
tell which song was written in 1979 and which one was written in, 2015, you know.
And it's very heartfelt, too. As people age, sometimes they can't hit those emotional highs and lows, but boy, I really felt it on that one. I really did.
I'm glad you did, because I'd be failing if people just didn't get what it does. Music is all about, you know, touching the heartstrings and that kick in the gut every so often. And if it doesn't do that, I've kind of missed it somewhere.
Now, now you've got 4 daughters, right? And it's kind of a silly question.
Do you ever get in arguments with your kids and just tell them that you have an OBE and then that's the end of the conversation?
Oh, listen, they rule the roost. They tell me where to go. You know, no. I don't think I've ever used the OBE thing like that. In fact, I was talking to my second oldest daughter a few weeks back, and she works in television. She works as a researcher on a big daytime TV show here.
Oh, really?
And and she said something about, yeah, but you know, but you've got an honour. And I said, yeah, I've got an MBE. She said, no, Dad, you've got an OBE. So she corrected me. I'd forgotten which one it was that I had.
So you don't walk around with a medal on.
I don't walk around not with my OBE pinned to my T-shirt. You know.
I think I would. And...
only around the house.
Who gave that to you? Who presented that to you?
It was the Queen.
The Queen. Wow.
Yeah.
And Bob Geldof. Yeah, how cool. Bob Geldof, do you give him flack about being Sir Bob Geldof? Do you give him any flack about that? I think I would.
Well, he has an honour that he can't use. He's not allowed to use the accent. So hold on. There's a dog chasing the cat. Hold on a second. this is the reality of my life here. Hold on. He has an honour that he can't use because he's Irish, so it's a token one. At least I can stick mine on a letter when I complain about, you know, parking in Bath.
Boy, the Irish can't get a break.
No, the Irish can't get a break at all. You know, it's never easy for them.
Your last album was very strong too, Fragile. Over 10 years to craft this work of art. Become was as good as any synth pop record out there. I mean, from someone who's been in the industry for that long to make something that relevant, and you work, and also Dark Dark Night, very strong track you produced with Moby.
Well, that was a bit wonderful of fun, work. Actually, you know, I think the odd thing about that is that, you know, Moby and I have been, connected for the last few years, but connected via social media. We've never actually spoken. We've never met. We've never spoken on the phone. And every time we've tried to meet up, something's gotten in the way. So it's like conceiving a baby without actually being in the same room. It's very odd. So we've created this object that we can't actually behold. You know, it's very odd. The two of us are completely strangers in a way to each other. So, it was good. And I'm glad you liked Fragile. I was very proud of that record, even though it took a ridiculous amount of time.
You did.
It wasn't 10 years. It wasn't 10 years full on. I mean, I had lots of periods during that 10-year period where I just thought, well, you know, does the world really need to hear another Midge record? I'm not sure they do. You know, all artists are full of self-doubt, and I had a lot of self-doubt during that period, but I stuck with it and ended up making something I was very proud of.
Your voice is as strong as ever.
Well, that is possible because I don't really stop. You know, I work live a lot, and I think that maybe keeps it in good shape. I know many artists who kind of struggle, and it's not the same. I mean, the voice has changed. You know, I can't say it hasn't. It's a bit more gruff around the
Full
edges,
on.
But
yes.
it still has a lot of power, and I can still hit those notes up there. So
you can.
I'm incredibly lucky in that respect. But I know, as I said, I know a lot of people who kind of suffer from it, because it's a muscle. You know, your voice box is a muscle, and it relaxes and it gets old and flappy, and things happen, and just like everything else in your body, it all goes south eventually. So I'm just very lucky that it's still there, and I think keeping it in use a lot. I'm doing lots of festivals through the summer. So I keep it in use all the time, so it'll be fairly well limbered up for me coming over in a couple of weeks.
Yes, no, you're hitting those highs. It's just unbelievable to hear. It just sends chills down my body, honestly. Even though it's a YouTube clip, but I still get that feeling. I can sense it from the crowd. They're very excited. You're playing with Paul Young.
He's a lovely, lovely guy. He's one of the good guys. We've obviously worked together in the past, but never actually toured together. This is a whole new thing. I came up with the idea right about this time last year. Paul had just done his first tour of the US in 25 years, I think, and it went down well. And I just said, well, look, let's go out together and have a bit of fun, you know, share the load and share the fun involved in doing it.
Right.
And we've already done the first three weeks or so over on the East Coast. So it's been great fun. It's been fabulous.
Also on these YouTube clips, you're doing a lot of guitar solos. Another surprise, and the crowd is going wild on these guitar solos.
Yeah, well, I'm a guitarist first and foremost. Singing came first because when I was a kid, singing didn't cost anything. A guitar cost money, so I've been a guitar player long before I was allowed anywhere near a synthesizer. Or a studio for that matter. So I thoroughly enjoy. I love playing the guitar. I love making lots of noise.
I can tell.
And I think that probably comes across on the clips as well. The ones whatever you've seen.
Oh yes, I love those guitar solos. They're wonderful. Do you ever look at these old YouTube videos of, you know, MTV clips and just laugh? I mean, I was watching Dancing with Tears in My Eyes yesterday, and there's an upright record player. I had to laugh.
The clip you're talking about, yeah.
And
yeah, those things. You'll see those on antique television shows now. You know, these things will be very, very sought after.
Right.
You know, classic eighties vinyl player.
And it brought back memories of the '80s, where we're all under we just felt the threat of acid rain and nuclear war.
Yeah,
could really
I know,
sense
and
that.
And it's amazing how things never really change.
True.
They were still thinking about that stuff.
Never spoken to an OBE now. I can cross that off my list. Thank you so much, Midger. This was amazing. Thank you.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
And now let's connect with Benjamin John Power of Blank Mass.
The reason why I reached out is because I interviewed Russ at the editors, and you know, I was doing a lot of research about that album, Violence. I read about your involvement. I was very excited. Apparently, there's another version of the editors' album that's a bit different.
Is that what they told you? Yeah.
Yes.
I actually worked in isolation on that album, and they'd sent me their recordings that they made in Oxford there, and they were kind of demos, and they just said just go and have at it. Like, there's no right or wrong way to do this.
Right.
So I did, and it came back pretty hard, I guess. Which is good. I mean, I think they had to kind of tame it a little bit before it saw the light of day. I mean, yeah, there is another version of that album kicking around somewhere with one of the bands. That is, that's a little different to what they released. But it was an interesting thing to work on. I've never worked on like a full band, rock band that has like five different members. And obviously, you know, for the past 15 years, the only band that I've been in has had one other person in it. So it's an interesting dynamic, I think. I guess a lot of the time these things are like an exercise in diplomacy, I guess, and I guess you have to like kind of come to kind of some kind of agreement with each other, which is a bit of an abstract concept to me, but I totally understand it. And it's interesting how it ended up sounding out. I mean, it didn't sound a lot like what the finished version that I had made,
right.
But I feel like that was that. I feel like that was part of the process for the band actually trying to actualize the sound that they were kind of going for. So I think that even though it does sound drastically different, the version that I made, I don't think, you know, they might not have got to their finished result in the same way if they hadn't have gone through that stage, if you see what I mean.
Right.
Saying that, there's a couple of tracks on there that do actually sound like Barricade actually sounds very similar, and that was the first one I did. And Violence is close too.
Oh yeah.
Violence is close too. But there's a version of Darkness at the Door, which is floating around. Which is, I mean, like some like tracks like that were very different.
Well, yeah. It's I mean, it's pretty hardcore for an Editor's album. You're there in spirit, at least. I mean, hovering over this album, I really appreciate that. You know, your latest release is probably the most hardcore release I've listened to in this past year. I mean, it's hardcore industrial, this Record Day release.
For sure.
Yeah, it's odd scene.
Yeah, no problem.
And Shit Luck, I mean, God forbid you try to translate the lyrics of this thing, but I think you're a bit amused by people trying to figure out what you're saying.
I find it hilarious, I really do. Sometimes people get it out of me, but I mean the way I approach the use of vocals in general is always textually. It has been just as another textual like entity. But with Odd Scene and Shit Luck, I have actually been writing vocals, which like lyrics, distinguishable lyrics, which I haven't done for quite a long time. And you know, it's a fun thing to do. I don't really see myself as I mean, I've worked with instrumental music for such a long time, and I don't really like to tell people what the relationship they should be having with a piece of music. I don't like to dictate how they're going to engage with something. Just in the same way that, you know, I end up playing in clubs, but I don't think that my music is necessarily just for clubs. You know, it's not just club music. I find it quite an interesting concept that somebody would dictate to somebody when and where they should be listening to this music and how they should engage with it. You know, especially when as far as lyrics go. So you know, I mean, that was a very long-winded way of explaining it. I find it very difficult to disassociate what I make with what I love. So, I mean, this is like a real cliche. This is like a huge cliche, I think, for any musician, for them to say, I make the music that I want to listen to in the world. But, I mean, I do honestly feel like that is the one thing that I've managed to stay true to ever since I started to do this professionally and even before. So, I mean, you know, I don't want to become sick of my music also because, you know, I do have to go out and play it live every single night. So,
right, exactly.
Yeah, so it's important to keep myself on my toes, but just in the same way as if I don't enjoy playing a song anymore in the live set, I'm more the kind of person that would, you know, if I'm outside of an album campaign or whatever, I would probably stop playing that track live because I, you know, I want to be having fun as well. I'm in this for the long haul, so I don't want to like drive myself crazy trying to do something that I think, you know, might sell better or, you know, whatever. That doesn't really interest me. But I think you can tell somebody who's doing it because they enjoy it or somebody because they're doing it because they want to reach a certain place in a careerist sense. But.
Right. The music videos, I want to ask you about a few of these. The Rats music video especially, it's a bit cheeky, this one. I noticed the trolley behind you is completely empty.
So I just noted that last night. So I'm wondering if you were on the ride at Disneyland before it opened, because there's no one behind you.
I'll tell you now, it was open. Cheeky is probably the right word. I mean, I think emotionally and sentiment throughout my music is pretty dramatic and serious. And I think it's important to remember that. Yeah, and I think it's also very important to not take yourself too seriously in these situations. I mean, I like, you know, I still have fun with what I do, so I don't like it. I am a cheeky person. But I think it's juxtaposed very well. It was quite opportunistic. I was actually dragged on a family holiday, and I saw an opportunity to maybe record something that was kind of fun and completely juxtaposed with the sentiment of the track itself. And also, it was an experiment to see if I could stay on that thing for the whole time and not change my facial expression.
Because
it's so ridiculous. To be sat on something like that in the first place, especially somewhere like Disneyland, which is heavily flawed, you know, ideologically in the first place.
And the D75 video, fantastic also.
The whole idea of this is one... So the name D75 is the second part of a chess move in a hypothetical game of chess, which is a response to Manuel Gottsching's E2-E4. And even on the playout groove, on the record, I wanted to say, you know, this would be a call to arms for a game of chess with Manuel Gottsching, but he's never responded to me. So we'll see, but I think it's quite important that, you know, that it is similar to the rat in the sense that you are just like focusing on one person the whole time, but there's obviously this person goes through a range of emotions which are obviously heightened and more accentuated than they would necessarily be in a game of chess that you would be having with somebody. But this, it is like a dialogue, a turbulent dialogue between you and one other person, which obviously can draw similarities to a game of chess. And that game of chess is one that I tried to instigate with Mr. Manuel Gottsching, but there's been no response yet. So we will see. Maybe if I kind of push that a little bit more through things like this, I'll get a response one day.
You're on the coolest label in the world, Sacred Bones Records, and you've collaborated with a few of the artists too. I spoke with Zola Jesus and...
Yeah, I actually heard that. I actually heard when you... Yeah.
Really? She loves you.
Yeah, she's like my sister. She's a great person. I love her dearly. I have a lot of time for her. Hopefully we will collaborate again at some point.
You're really big into RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah, I guess you can't really miss that one, can you? Yeah, no, I'm a big fan. Yeah, I'm a very big fan. In fact, there's a new episode tonight, which I've forgotten about. I'm actually, I think I can still watch it. I'm actually doing a couple of shows at the moment. I just got back from a show in Krakow yesterday. And before that, I was in Leipzig. I was in this huge goth festival, Wave Goth Technic Festival in Leipzig. And tomorrow I play in Glasgow, which is a lot closer to home for me. So I'm in the middle of doing a mini tour, if you will. I'm actually in the studio right now recording a new album.
Oh, my God. So I'm
working on that right now. The only thing I will say is I do like to try and make everything sound a little different than the last thing that I've done, as I'm sure you can tell. So make it that way as well.
Right. Well, thanks so much. This was fantastic. You're my favorite.
Thank you.
I got to speak to you. It's great. So it's wonderful to have a podcast to reach out to people that whom you admire and respect. And I'm looking forward to this new music. I'm addicted already, so I really appreciate
it. Well, that's great. Well, I hope it works out for you. No, my pleasure. Thank you for calling.
Today's show was produced and edited by Gregory Day. That's me. If you'd like to contact me directly, you can reach me. It's greg@pdxpodcast.com.
It took me a long, long time to understand that people could react to a piece of music the same way I react to other people's music. And I just never, ever, ever thought of myself or saw myself in a position like that, where something I have done or written or created or produced has had a major effect on someone else's life. So it still kind of sits weirdly uncomfortably with me. but it's at the same time, it's such an honor. You know, it really is. It's such an amazing thing that people, you know, get married to, or, you know, bury their parents or whatever, to pieces of music that I've had something to do with, and that's just incredible.